Hi, this is Maureen Gazda, and I'm speaking to Christine Vivier. She's going to be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Perinatal Leadership Forum in November. So thank you, for Christine, for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, I'm happy to, Maureen. So thanks for chatting with me today.
As
I'm really excited
about
this conference.
Oh, I know. It's going to be good, and you're going to be talking basically on the overarching theme on communication. And I was just wondering, to start off, have you spoken to healthcare professionals before? I know that you've spoken all over the world, U.S., you know, U.K., Japan, Australia. But have you, and you've spoken to companies and business leaders, but what about healthcare professionals and more specifically perinatal nurses?
Yeah, so this is the first time that I'm speaking to a group of perinatal nurses, so I'm really excited about that. I do work with healthcare professionals and healthcare organizations in my work, so I've spoken to lots, and certainly there have been nurses in my audience before, but this is the first time it's strictly nurse leaders in perinatal nursing, so I'm really excited about that.
Okay, great. And like I said before, as you know, it's going to be on addressing the importance of communication in the workplace and how valuable that is in creating a, you know, cohesive work environment and improving performance and ultimately providing the best care for their patients. And you have really dedicated your life to that and bringing people's, you know, true self out and positive attitude, and especially through the field of positive psychology. Can you just explain a little bit about that and how that helps, how you've used that to help people in the business world and employees improve their performance and the quality of their work?
Yeah, sure. I'd say it really started, Maureen, with me. So like when I was 17, I bought my mother this book. It's called Enthusiasm Makes the Difference. You know, I didn't even know anything about self-help or any of that stuff. But it's by Norman Vincent Peale, and I don't think my mother ever picked it up, but I did. And I started, it really spoke to me, and so I started doing some of the practices he told me. But, you know, it was kind of a weird thing. Like, I was this typical, like, whatever, you know, 17-year-old, and then when I got older, you know, and got in the work world. And I didn't find many people who were interested in this kind of stuff. But for some reason, it always called to me. And so I started using whatever positive, I'll just call them positive approaches. Like, and it really was, you know, it's about bringing out positive emotion. So in my own work. And that's how it got started. And I found that I really changed the way that I showed up. First, you know, when I was a little bit younger, you know, it was around like friendships and meeting new people. And then it became how I showed up at work and starting to be just a little more authentically me, whereas I had thought I needed to fit a certain profile. Once I started to do this, I began to be a little more of myself. And then what I found was people responded to me really differently. And then I began seeing my work differently. Yeah. So you know how that goes, right?
Yeah, because I think a lot of us aren't our authentic selves all the time. We kind of put on a facade, and people can tell that. And so when you become, like, your true self and you know who that is, I think people appreciate that and notice it more.
Yeah, and so often, like, one of the things I found was that, you know, first for me, I found that, you know, here I was this MBA, and, you know, I'm supposed to, like, I don't know, be serious about finance and all these things, right? And so I'm like trying to, and I'm, you know, and I'm a young woman, and I'm in this high-tech company, and so, you know, I'm trying to show up as like this serious, thoughtful, you know, whatever, you know, try to be credible or whatever. So it wasn't like, I don't always think people are putting on facades like for bad reasons. I think they're sort of trying to show up as who they think they're supposed to be in that situation. Yeah.
Kind of what the way society tells us we should be or how we should act, kind of like.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So that's how it kind of got started. And you asked me, like, well, you know, what did I find with other people in business? And so for a good long period of my early career, what happened was I was really just doing these things myself. and then using them myself and seeing what was happening and seeing how it was transforming my own work and my own life. And as a fairly young mid-level manager, I ended up leading a worldwide global change in a 137,000-person company.
Wow.
And we were cutting the company by more than half, down to 55,000 people. So we were going from 137 to 55,000. And everything got very negative. People got very scared, you know. And, I mean, it was for good reason.
Yeah,
they were trying to save the company. Yeah. And the leaders of the company were trying to save the company. They were trying to make it more profitable. I understand that. But, you know, so for me, what I was seeing happening around me just so didn't fit with, like, the kind of environment I wanted to work in and that sort of thing. But, like, I didn't initially set out to lead this change ever. But what happened was because I was so clear on what I wanted and how I wanted to work and kind of environment I wanted to work in, I ended up, you know, just talking to people, ended up talking to the CFO and being very concerned about some things I saw happening in the company. And so little by little, I just ended up leading this cross-company initiative, you know, engaging the executive team, and then ultimately I became responsible for leading the change worldwide and, you know, being in that position. And so that was the point at which I saw the difference in other people, because what happened was I was focusing the entire company on positive, well, positive things, but it was customer loyalty and employee engagement. And these were the only, customer loyalty was the only non-financial measure that they agreed to have as one of the goals for the company. And so, and, you know, we ended up tying it to the compensation for the top 200 leaders. And, but what I found was, like, as I was, you know, working with people around the world, people at all different levels. I mean, like people, you know, the frontline team in Asia, in Taiwan or China, you know, mainland China, or you know, president of Europe or the head of one of our, you know, 18,000 person divisions, they were actually like happier and more enthusiastic and more optimistic. Mm-hmm. Like, and when I had talked to them before, you know, I would hear things like, I mean, they would just be kind of glum, or they would, you know, say, oh, you got to talk to the CEO, you know. Like, here I am. I'm not as senior as the president of Europe or the head of a division, but they're telling me I got to give some messages to the CEO. So I saw this big change, like this, and this renewal and engagement of energy in the organization. And so that was the first time that I saw what it could do for everyone, like not just for me.
Okay. And so you, I noticed you said on your website you were saying that you created roundtables with leaders, and is that how you kind of like help them forge better relationships? You were kind of like the, I don't know what I want to say, like the mediator or the...
Well, that was a slightly, well, there was one roundtable I created when I was in this high-tech company. It's now part of HP. So when I was part of that company, and we created this a consortium with a bunch of other Fortune 50-type companies like DuPont and Chevron and others, Ford. And so then we had a group of people that would get together across these companies and look at best practices. But that wasn't within my company per se. So it was really around the change in work and the change in goals. And we actually even had behavioral changes that we required of leaders in the organization. And we had empowerment work, like specific practices that we changed and decision-making that we changed so that employees could be more engaged and more empowered in things that they were doing with our customers. And so that's more of what I did inside the company. But then I ended up leaving because I really wanted to just pursue this work, this kind of work, with multiple organizations. And so I left and I went and ran the Northeast division of an organization that was called, it was a nonprofit called Center for Quality of Management. And that's when I set up the leadership roundtables with CEOs of different companies, or CFOs of different companies, HR executives from different companies. And again, the idea there was for them to be able to share best practices with each other. But it was also, I found, and this is, you know, true for leaders, anybody who's moving up in the organization, it starts to become true, is what I learned is that leaders can feel pretty isolated. You know, they can feel kind of like they're in their own little bubble, and it can be hard to talk to other people about some of the things that are on their mind.
Yeah.
So those round tables began to help with that.
Okay, great. And you, as you know, this conference is on communication, and nursing, obviously, especially perinatal nursing, like just the physical care just skims the surface of what these nurses do and have to deal with. I mean, communication between their coworkers and having to communicate effectively and with patients and with patients' families who are undergoing, like, heartbreaking situations. So what kinds of tips and knowledge do you plan on addressing to help these nurse leaders communicate more effectively, not only with their coworkers, but how they can better approach the emotional aspect of their job?
Yeah, so I mentor and coach people in medical fields. It's just
okay.
One of the things that I ended up doing. And so I think there, just as in business as well, what I find is that, and what I'll be talking about at the conference and giving them exercises and practices to do this, is that it's so important to first be really clear on who they are and who they want to be as a leader, right,
mm-hmm.
and their own personal vision. Because so often you're pulled in lots of different directions. You've got so much going on, you know,
exactly.
You're getting feedback and emotional things from the patients and from your colleagues and from your subordinates and from your bosses. And, you know, and so it's this like web sometimes. That's how some people have described it to me, right? And feeling caught in this web.
It's overwhelming too.
Yeah, it can be really
overwhelming
sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, Maureen. And
mm-hmm.
so I find that it's really important to get grounded in who you are, who you want to be, who you want to be as a leader, how you want to see things, what you want to have happen, and how you want to show up. Because
mm-hmm.
that's very calming, that's very centering, and there's a lot of different approaches and pathways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a one-size-fits-all on how you do that, but there's some very effective techniques I've found and practices that I've found that can really help people to do that. And once they do that, then they are much better able to communicate with others, to not get as sucked in to others'
mm-hmm.
emotional issues, which isn't to say they don't care. They can be very caring.
Right.
But, you know, one of my mentors, George Valiant, Dr. George Valiant, he gave an example of, you know, if somebody's hit by a car, you know, you don't want the mother to be the one trying to, like, resuscitate them there, because, like, at that moment, she's totally,
devastated.
Usually, sucked into
yeah.
the emotion, right? But the
mm-hmm.
EMTs, the professionals, right, they care, but their interest is in bringing this person back to their best life, right? And so giving them the best possible care. And so that's how I guess I would see it, you know, for nurse leaders and nurses as well. It's that they can care, but they don't have to get stuck in.
Yeah, that's definitely great advice, because I think we can become too invested sometimes, and that can kind of, you know, take over.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I find
that
if you – go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, one of the things that really helps, and it can be hard to think about this, but when we can raise our own positivity, that really helps us to, I'm going to say surf the waves, because surfing is one of my fun new things to do. So, right. But it just helps us to, like, navigate the waves, right, and not get caught in thrashing around in them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that can really be helpful, is to increase our own positivity. which isn't always easy in these situations.
Yeah.
But there definitely are things that you can do that help you.
Will you be giving tips on that and how to increase your
Absolutely.
Positivity in the speech?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Maureen, I like to engage with people, and I like it to be, you know, fun if it can be. You know, it'll be fun for me.
Definitely.
I hope it will be for them. And
but
you know, so it'll be more than just like talking to them about you could do this and you can do that. It's like they'll actually experience and practice. They'll raise their positivity while we're there. I'll give them some ways that they can do that. So yeah, we'll definitely talk about that.
That's amazing. What also stood out to me a lot when I was reading about you, and I read this on your website, and it really spoke to me, is when you talk about positive attributes and how positive attributes and skills go unnoticed or even squelched in people. And I think many people can relate to this, where your self-esteem or your self-confidence or anxiety or fear takes over and you're not able to be your fully best self. And I know that you talk about having tools and having ways to change people's attitude to break that kind of cycle. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure. Yes. I kind of came to that sort of slowly in my career, starting to see it. And then, unfortunately, there was a tragedy with a boy that I knew. And
I read about that. Yes, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. And it was when I was back getting my master's degree in positive psychology. And so my research had been all about motivation, bringing out the highest levels of motivation, which I still use. But I decided I didn't want to publish that research. I wanted to do something else, and because it was just, you know, I was just devastated. And so anyway, I sort of had like a little mini epiphany through what happened there, and realized something that had been brewing for a long time that I'd been thinking about but I hadn't known, and realized I wanted to look at strengths and gifts in kids who were not in the top of the class. So I took the bottom 80%. And I ended up identifying a set of gifts that I call gifts that conflict with school. But I've since then, even it's expanded, because now I've discovered that so many of the adults I work with, and really successful people, you know, and highly skilled physicians or nurses or leaders in all different arenas, still have these scars from the school days sometimes, or from just standards that don't fit us. And so I talk about these myths that, you know, start in education, but they can mislead us in life, and these gifts that conflict with school. So what I realized out of this work was just that no matter where somebody is right now, and let me just talk about young adults for the moment, but no matter how they're performing in school right now, they have gifts that just aren't being seen because of the way we structure and think about education. And as soon as you change that frame of reference and you understand what their underlying gifts are, their gifts are actually in conflict with what we're asking of them in school. And so, but when they tap into those gifts, and when they tap into those gifts and they tap into their, what we call their signature strengths, which are more like strengths in the moral domain, character strengths, right? But we can actually, I've mapped out like how those play into any kind of role you could want. I mean, from, you know, a scientific leader to a business person or business leader to a physician, nurse, you name it, to a Nobel Prize winner. I mean, they could, you can't believe where they could go with these, but they're just hidden right now. And I find that many adults in the workplace, as I said, no matter how successful they are, and even especially maybe the ones who aren't succeeding right now, you know, where people have people on their teams that aren't thriving, they've got hidden gifts and hidden strengths that they are not recognizing. And sure, the world around them is asking them to meet standards and measuring them in ways that does not recognize their gifts or their strengths. But the first step is if they recognize them, they can do something about it.
Yeah, I think that's so true, because, I mean, even in school, they put so much emphasis on, you know, standardized tests, and that's how you're measured, your intelligence is measured, and how, like, you're supposed to be measured as a student, which I think is absolutely, you know, I mean, it's important, but it doesn't value the person as how smart they are, how intelligent they are, and what they can offer the world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, there are kids who are, like, the worst performing in school who are brilliant.
Right,
we
exactly.
just aren't seeing it there, right? And likewise, like, we might be, you know, there might be a nurse leader in an organization, or they may have somebody on their staff who is very bright and very capable, but not showing it in this particular context right now for some reason.
I know, and even growing up, I was that way. I mean, I was a good student, but I was horrible at math. Cannot do math to save my life. Like, I've never been a good math student. So that kind of, like, you know, my math grade would always bring my grades down a little bit, but on the flip side, I've always been really into writing, creative writing, English, and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I can see where it, you know, it's the whole academic thing as a kid, measuring up to a certain thing can really start you off in a bad way.
Yes, yes. And, I mean, it's so wonderful that, Maureen, that you're so good at writing and creative writing. It's wonderful. And that's not something I was very good at. And in school, that turns out to be very important, right? So, you know, it sounds like you found places where you could really do things that you were good at and that you felt good about yourself doing.
You find your niche.
Yeah, but some kids don't, and some adults
right,
at
no,
times.
Some, exactly.
Yeah, and there's, you know, what I find is there's always plateaus in life, and so there's times where any adult can find themselves not thriving or not performing
definitely.
The way they think that they should be. Like, maybe they've been promoted into a new role, or maybe something has changed, or, you know, there's all sorts of reasons that can happen. But yeah, so it's really, the thing is that most of the time, you know, we're looking at, like, what's wrong with us, or thinking that there's something wrong with us, or being told that there's some measure we should meet. And when we're not, that means there's something wrong with us. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Exactly. Getting back to, I know, like, communication, and I just want to ask you, are you to talk about basically are you going to give some examples of communication mistakes people make in the workplace, and conversely, what communication tools can promote a positive work environment for these nurse leaders?
Yes, I will definitely talk about things that can promote a better environment and get them more of what they want, get them the results they want sooner, more easily. I mean, that's a lot of what, you know, my message is about, is how they can have much greater impact in much less time. And so, yeah, I'll definitely talk about some things in communication. You know, in terms of mistakes people make in communication, I won't probably spend a lot of time on that in the talk, but because we're going to want to look at what do we do instead. But
right, exactly.
I find that one of the big mistakes people make is they are simply reacting to people and situations and believing that, like, what's happening around them is causing them to react the way they do. And when you pull it apart, that's really not the case. And so when you can be clear on how you want to be in the situation, and you can't do that in the moment, right? So that's another mistake. People think, oh, I should have reacted differently in that moment.
Exactly.
Well, in the moment,
it's the heat of the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's the heat of the moment. So, like, I find myself often saying to clients, look, whatever you do in the moment, you just do the best you can. Don't beat yourself up over that. Like, it's the best you can do. But what you can do is outside of the moment, you can make shifts. And then down the road, some of your moments are going to be very different and you're going to respond differently. But another mistake that I see that I will talk about is people believe they can't have what they want, right? And so then often in communication, you know, they're either trying to control things or they're trying to manipulate. I don't mean like in a bad way, but, you know, they're trying to get people to, you know, do something differently because fundamentally they're feeling like I can't get what I want here. And so they think that they have to control other people. Another big one that I see is that people feel like they're not valued, or they're not valued appropriately, or their contribution isn't valued appropriately. And that can cause communication problems between people, right? Because if I'm feeling like you're not valuing me,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk to you differently, right? I might
exactly.
either because, yeah.
No, sorry, go ahead. I interrupted you.
No, I can talk way too much.
I was just going to say that, I mean, communication is everything in all aspects of life. I mean, in a simple eye roll or the intonation of someone's voice or a facial expression can completely change a relationship in like a split second. And that's like how you show your attitude. That's kind of how, you know, it can change. And it's so true. Communication is huge.
Yes. Yeah. No, it really is. And, you know, a lot of people think it's about the other person, the communication.
Mm-hmm.
And my message is it's about you.
It is.
Right? It's about what's going on inside of me. And a lot of us think, well, we have to change these other people. We have to change this other situation. And when I told you about And, you know, when I told you about that change that I led, I mean, I did want things to be different in the company, for sure. But it really first came from, and I didn't know this at the time. I wasn't, you know, I stumbled into this at the time. But now, you know, that I've studied it and worked with so many people for so many years, I can see what was going on. Like, it's what Gandhi said, right? You create the change in yourself first. And mm-hmm. that changes the communication with the other people. And, you know, there's specific things you can do. Like, for example, one thing I find is listening.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I don't think people do enough of that.
Yeah. And how you do it, right?
Yeah, we don't do enough of that. We're first to, like, and we're all guilty of it, to just, you know, put out whatever we want to say without actually listening to the other person. And I think you're right. Listening is key.
Yeah. And listening, you know, without judgment. So a lot of times we listen kind of with our own voice going in our head, and it's not necessarily that we're so much judging the other person, but we are kind of making judgments about them or about what they're saying or about the situation.
Yep.
And so when we're doing that, it kind of closes down, kind of narrows what we're able to see and respond to, which has its benefits at times. I mean, you know, as you know, talking about the prior situation, right? If somebody's in an emergency, we don't want to be expanding all our thinking right then. We want to, you know, immediately take action, do what's needed right in that moment. But a lot of communication isn't an emergency situation, and that's where, if we can listen more non-judgmentally, and there are ways to help yourself to do that. So, I agree with you, Maureen. I think that's really important.
Yeah, so true. And I just, it's often said that, you know, the saying, we must take care of ourselves before we can fully take care of others. And I think nurses sometimes have a hard doing that with the mental and emotional stress they face on a daily basis, it can put a damper on the way they communicate and their overall mood and possibly the care they give to their patients. So will you be giving advice on how they can manage their stress and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's the, you know, biggest issue that I see with leaders, and particularly women leaders. And I think particularly with nurse leaders, I mean, they have so many demands on them from so many different directions, right? Mm-hmm. And it's tough in a physician-driven environment, and yet the nurses are the ones who, and my grandmother was a nurse, and I have very dear friends who are nurses, including a NICU nurse. You know, so I'm very familiar both from, like, work and personal with some of the things that they're dealing with. And they, you know, they're the ones who often, usually, are keeping things on track, who know what's going on, who are close to the patients, who catch, you know, physician mistakes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. but they're pulled in a lot of different directions, have demands on them from a lot of different directions. And as you said, Maureen, sometimes it's really hard to find time and ways to take care of themselves when that's going on. But that is absolutely essential. And so one of the things I talk about is how you can free up more time in mm-hmm. your work and in your life. And not time management per se, but ways that you can approach work differently, approach life differently, so that you actually have an even bigger impact, but you do it in less time. And that starts a little bit with taking care of yourself, but what it really does is it frees you up to have more time to take care of yourself. And it also, like a lot of what I think about and like to talk with people about and engage people on is approaching your work from a way that works for you,
mm-hmm.
right? So going back to, Maureen, to like what we were talking about earlier, right? It's not just taking the standards that are given to you. Yeah, some, of course, standards of care or certain times you have to be there or things like that, of course.
Right.
But there's many, many places where you have an opportunity to rethink, reshape, reframe how you approach your work. And you can find ways to do that that work for you. And that's also, of course, where communication comes in, because when you figure out some ways that might work for you, that's where you want to be able to communicate with others effectively on how that can be a win-win for you and for them.
Exactly. I think that's huge, especially for nurses, because they're not only just dealing, I've said that a bunch of times in this interview, but they're not only just dealing with caring for the physical aspect of people, but dealing with families who are going through, you know, really hard times can put on so much emotional stress, and then trying to have their own lives. What you're saying is so true.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, exactly. And the emotional stress with the families, I mean, that's tough. That's a tough work environment for mm-hmm. anyone. So, you know, one of the things, and I bring some pieces of this into the positivity area is where we'll really address some of this, but I bring some of this into the talk, but it is just a keynote. It's not, you know, a whole program, but
exactly.
You know, the work in resilience helps with that. But, you know, again, getting centered yourself, getting clear on your emotions, getting clear on who you want to be in this situation can really help a lot with dealing mm-hmm. with others who are in a really emotional situation. And I know nurses already do that. So we're going to be talking about fine-tuning practices that they already have and adding some practices maybe that might really give them a big boost.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be extremely helpful. Just as we're wrapping up, I just have like one more question, and that's basically, how do you think your expertise will help these nurse leaders in an overall sense be better at their jobs? And what questions do you hope to answer, if you can give it just a tease, in this speech
yeah.
for these nurse leaders?
Well, how can you feel less stressed?
Mm-hmm.
How can you have a much bigger impact in much less time? How can you engage your workforce and feel, you and your people, feel more energized, more
mm-hmm.
invigorated, more optimistic?
Mm-hmm.
How can you feel less tired and more inspired in your
work? Oh, that's good. Yeah, so that sounds amazing. I think that's all I have to, I think this, you know, these people attending are going to be lucky to hear what you have to say. And I'm mm-hmm. sure everyone will be looking forward to it. So thank you so much, Christine, for taking the time to answer a few of my questions and have a chat.
Oh, you're so welcome, Maureen. I loved it. I love your questions. I love just having the casual conversation with you. So thank you for taking the time. And I feel lucky to be engaging with them in this conference. Like, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
I love this work. I love these opportunities. I know it's going to be a group of really amazing people who are going to have fabulous connections with each other, and I hope fabulous connections with me and the other speakers.
Well, you certainly sound like you thrive off of these speeches. You can hear in your voice that you really thrive off of, you know, speaking to people and helping people and just promoting this positivity that you basically are.
Oh, thanks, Maureen. Yeah, and to come back to something you said, you know, writing, I don't thrive with writing. It's really hard for me, but yeah, you're right.
Oh, I'm sure
speaking
you do.
People,
I'm sure you
I love
do.
It. No, no, we'll leave the writing to people like you. I love that you love it and that you're good at it. But I do
thank
enjoy
speaking.
Thank
you so
speaking. Much. Thanks. Thank you. It was great talking with you. And I'll look forward to seeing what you put together.
Thank you so much, Christine.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.